it's an art. And for people like me who grew up with IT, we more or less try to understand the machine and not use the machine. And this is a big difference. And when I think about artificial intelligence, for me, it's neither artificial nor intelligent. It's boring, brutal mathematics with probabilities.
Transportation Matters, the CEO podcast of Daimler Truck.
Welcome to Transportation Matters. Thank you all so much for joining. My name is Martin Daum. I'm the CEO of Daimler Truck. In today's episode, we will talk about the power of digitization, and the guest we have for this topic is a true digital pioneer. He is not based in Silicon Valley. However, he's based in Neckarsulm in Baden-Württemberg, Germany. Rolf Schumann is co-CEO of Schwarz Digits, the tech subsidiary of Schwarz Group. And yes, Schwarz Group is, above all, known for its retail brands Lidl and Kaufland. But it is also a frontrunner in digitization, and its efforts go way beyond e-commerce. Schwarz Group's ambitions are even compared to the US giant Amazon. I'm very much looking forward to hear from Rolf about his digital endeavors and what other companies and we all can learn from his experience. Rolf Schumann, welcome to our show.
Thank you. Great having me here.
Rolf, I got told in preparing for this podcast that you started in IT when you built personally your first computer. How old were you back then and what sparked your interest?
It's interesting. It was really in the year 1984 when I was 10 years old. And when you hear the year 1984, you all think about the Macintosh advertisement and the Super Bowl, but it was not the Macintosh. It was a Sinclair ZX81. It was a microprocessor computer, and I was building it out of the parts because this was cheaper. And at the end of the day, it had 1 kilobyte main memory. So you can imagine, you wouldn't really name it as a computer today, but for me, it was the biggest, coolest thing you could imagine.
But in 1984, I, for example, was at university and we were working with mainframe computers and these punched cards, where the biggest one is that once you have a stack, and I programmed and I had a stack of 1,000 cards, and then you trip them over and then you sit a half an hour to sort them back in the initial one. That was my computer experience in 1984. What sparked it that you started with these PCs at that time? And then, by the way, age of 10, this is like Bill Gates, nerdy.
But the key thing is exactly, it wasn't the punch card. But this machine had a programming language, a higher programming language, BASIC. So I started programming with BASICs, and this was the key thing. For me, it was like a fairy tale. You could totally let your creativity run. There was no limit. And I was programming, of course, building some games. So I was making like a racing game, a car racing game. And then later on, I was calculating complex things. So for example, my father, he was an architect. So I ran the calculations when he was doing the statics of a house with a machine, which was much faster, like they did it at this time with a normal calculator and a piece of paper. And this was the fascinating thing for me. As a kid, you had ideas. You were not punching the card. You were programming in BASICs. And then suddenly, the machine was doing crazy things, sometimes not what you wanted to do. And this kind of game, playing with the machine, it was just a game. It was like a playground for me. And this was what sparked me. And later on, of course, I went through the whole range of computers. You can know Commodore came later on. Then, of course, the PC, the XT, the 8080, and then, of course, the 286, 80, and then up to, of course, what we know today, when you end up one day in the Apple world.
You used the word game a lot. Sometimes you have the feeling people who are really thrilled and working deep in this IT area, for them, it's really more like playing. For us, I would say normal folks, it's a big black box. You put something in and something comes out and you have no clue what happens in between. But you're working inside the box and you call that a game. How would you describe the game feeling?
The difference is some people put stuff in and it comes out and they're just happy that it comes out. The game is you know what you want the machine to bring out, and the target is how do you have to program the machine to get your output. So the whole key thing is you had an idea what you want to achieve, and then the game was how do you have to punch the bits and bytes that the result you desired will at the end appear. And this was the whole thing. It was hours and nights I was sitting there coding to get the result I wanted to have. The funny thing is I did not end up as a gamer because the game for me was too boring. It was to break the game. So at the end of the day, I was then programming cheat codes, how you get unlimited lives or whatever. So all my friends, they were gaming, they didn't understand what the machine did, but I was making sure that you could cheat the game. So I was scanning the registers and the memory. The life you had, for example, in a jump and run game was subtracted and counted down. And then I was, instead of five lives, I was adding 500, these kind of stuff. So I always was trying to understand what does the machine do and how can you influence it or have another impact. I really was not the big gamer others were, gaming all day in, day out. I was more cheating the games.
I think that's really fascinating to get those feelings of people who work on IT. Potentially one other before we go to serious topics. Where I envy you guys in IT is always, if there's a problem, you always have the possibility you just switch off everything and then you switch it on again and the problem is gone. That is something I envy IT. In my life, that never happens. You know, being in a room and you have a fight and then you go out of the room and come back in and you start fresh, that's never working. But on IT, it seems to work. Did you have those experiences too on the IT side?
The funny thing is, the real cool IT people, and this is, they understand what goes wrong. Like with Windows, I was able to run a Windows machine without a blue screen because I knew what goes wrong and I knew what to do and how to behave. So it's like when you have an old car, an old timer. Some people know how to handle it and other people, they can't drive it. And this is IT. Even if IT is digital, it's not 100% reliable. So, and great IT guys, they understand where the code was not super clean, where you had these issues. You knew exactly which hardware you should not plug into a Microsoft device without making it crash. So this is why I'm saying it's an art. And for people like me who grew up with IT, we more or less try to understand the machine and not use the machine. And this is a big difference. And this turn off, turn on, this was more an attitude to learn with Microsoft. On the Mac, you were trying to fight to understand why the machine is not stable enough. Let's put it this way.
When we go back, when I think of 84, IT was that kind of a magic. Today, it's absolutely essential and a household good. I still remember one of my favorite jokes is when an old guy tells a young kid, when I was young, we had no computers. And the kid's answer is, how did you then enter the internet? That shows, in my opinion, in a nutshell, how self-understanding computer cell phones, you know, which are basically small computers, are for our day-to-day life. Now I fast forward and say, what is about artificial intelligence? Are we at the moment with artificial intelligence at the same point like we had been 30, 40 years ago with PCs? It looks a little bit like magic. It's a kind of a fun thing where you are in between gaming and distraction. And 40 years later, it's absolutely unthinkable that it ever was missing. What's your take on artificial intelligence?
You know, Martin, here I'm the party crasher. For me, artificial intelligence is not so sexy and overhyped as everybody is talking about it. Because when I think about artificial intelligence, for me, it's neither artificial nor intelligent. It's boring, brutal mathematics with probabilities. I'm not kidding. People are so fascinated how great a large language model can do crazy things. I'm saying, guys, this is a graph. And on the nodes, you have words. And then you have on the graph the probability what would be the next word. This is so unsexy. It's doing great things, but it's just mathematics. And the fact that you know what the next word is a probability which came with the training. So it's pure mathematics. And when people talk about artificial intelligence, I mean, guys, go one step back. Why is it so fascinating for everybody? Think you come out of school and you learned in mathematics addition, subtraction, division, and multiply. And now you remember this when you went to university and you have this book full of formulas. This is AI. You know, your data and your numbers is the same, but instead of using just four operators, you now have a book of formula. That's AI. And this is why it's changing everything. It's changing the world. And the reason why people don't understand it at the first glance is it's the same like in mathematics. To understand the book of the formulas, you need to understand mathematics. And this is what's about AI. It will change everything. You can recalculate everything. You will come to results and insights and outcomes you could not imagine before. That's the whole thing about AI. This is why I'm so fascinated to figure out how AI can totally generate new content. They understand the context and can synthesize information, but it's just pure mathematics, and you have this huge amount of, I call it formula, who will extend everything you had before into an era and a level people really cannot imagine. This is for me like 84, when I could not imagine what's all possible, and it was just like in a fairy tale, going in every day and exploring a new world. And this is what I'm saying. AI is so the coolest level of mathematics you can have. And the reason why it's so amazing is because 90% of our stored data is unstructured. And now you bring a formula to turn this into a structured element to generate unstructured content. And this is what I call it, this total exponential feeling and explosion people are so fascinated about. In the core, it's just mathematics.
And that is, in my opinion, would be the same with today's computers. You know, 40 years ago, when you're doing what you call that game, you went behind the scene, you know, you programmed. We don't program today. I click buttons and the buttons are exactly doing what they are supposed to do. Yeah, and I'd get very nervous if they are not doing that. So on the AI side, is this in the end, again, another button we click and it gives me far more powerful answers to questions than before? And we are at the moment still fascinating how the programming is. And in 10 years or in 5 years, we won't even ask what happens behind that button we click.
Right now, people cannot understand what happens there. Look, at the beginning, you were punching punch cards. Now you were clicking a mouse. And with AI, it's the same. You will click a prompt and you will ask questions like today what you did in Google, where you have a structured search. And now AI will generate the content. And I give you one thing about the time and the pace. What you see right now, AI generated movies, 1 minute movies, which is completely artificial, which is not real. And the amazing thing is those movies are, let's say there's some elements you realize there was a mistake, give them more time and go back how the movies from AI had been looked like 1 year ago. Within 1 year, you achieved a level of quality. I'm not saying cinema level, but at the first glance, don't see the difference if it's real or not. So you don't have to wait 5 years, Martin. This is happening in 18, 24, 36 months. It's so amazing. And the reason is we have now the capacity. So it's the silicon. It's always multiple elements. We have the silicon who can process, who can put in all this knowledge, all this, I would say, data, which is there. And then at the other side, what the AI will do, it will show you and spill out the results that we as human beings can totally focus on the, I call it, next level things. I'm always saying we will drive prosperity because from our daily job where 80% was used not to use our brain, just to use what we had drained before with repetitive tasks, this is done automated in the same or even better quality. And now you can really take your time for creativity and to innovate and really get the business innovation on the next level. For me, this whole AI thing is the new set of formula. We are much faster in calculating, and the boring calculating stuff is done automated so that we really now can focus. And this is where I'm seeing prosperity will increase and be driven with the AI because we drive automation on level. And it's not a lot of people talk about job killer. It's not a job killer because we all complain that we have this so-called work for workforce. We don't have enough people who can do the job. Now the machines will help us there. And this is why prosperity will totally be driven on the next level. And even for us, the automation will get better. On the other side, we have now more time to do the really important things also in service around human beings. So for me, this whole AI thing is, it's a booster.
Could we try to be very specific when it comes, for example, for logistics? Lots of our listeners are out of the transportation industry. And I know a little, or the Schwarz Group is very big in logistics. That's the backbone of your day-to-day business. What application you could see in the logistics of your group and subsequently in the logistics of our customers with AI, let's say 24 months from now or 5 years from now, you choose the time frame.
We can start with what we do today already. So look at the store. The most important thing in the store is that you have the goods available and you don't have an empty shelf. So the whole supply chain and the refilling or restocking is a key thing. So what we can do now is we have all the data, what was in the store, what was sold, what is shrinkage. And we can automatically reorder for the shelf the goods we will sell the next day. This optimization prediction is coming to a level with AI we didn't have before, which means we can predict and we will figure out which customer will be in which store and which kind of goods they might buy next day. We can do this now with these new training models. And when I'm saying this, think about retail. On the one hand side, we have a loyalty card. On the other hand side, we have the receipts of the customers who had been in the store. So we can really, with all this data, predict what is the profile, which kind of goods is bought on which store, which kind of customers go in there, anonymous or even when we have them personalized. So we really can totally calculate this. Then we see the seasoning, we see the offers, we see the behavior in the offers before, we see what was sold the day before, you see the whole economies. It goes up to the weather change, where people will change and adapt their habits, what they buy. And you can bring this all together. And so automated, we make sure that the next day we have in our shelf what the customer wants to do. This was impossible because we did not have the formulas, we didn't have the silicon capacity to calculate this. The data, with all respect, had been there. But now, out of the data, we get new insights and can totally work on this logistic. This means we can totally steer the trucks in the back end from the warehouses, and you have this whole end-to-end process based on the behavior, what happens in the store.
Really fascinating. What would you suggest to someone working today as a transportation company? What would you suggest that person to get more familiar with the possibilities of AI in his or her business?
The most important thing is, and this is really what we see, is from the demand, you have to come to the demand forecast planning. You have to understand where is the demand, and you have to get a much better understanding when do you have the good at which time, at which place. And the rest is optimization. We did this by going into loyalty programs. With our loyalty programs, we learned about the customer behavior to understand what will be the demand of tomorrow. I can tell you, we did an open book. So when we talk to our customers, we always make open the kimono. We said, you give us your receipts, and in return, we make you special offers, really personalized for you. And for this, we call it data deal. We learned what they like. We learned on what they are, have an appetite for. So we can really predict which customer group in which store would buy which kind of offers. So when you're in the logistics, you have to understand what are the orders I have to deliver. You have to understand what has to go from A to B, which is the good prediction. And from this point on, you have to go into your process with any kind of data you have. If it's the traffic where you work a lot in, if it's on the other side, your staff, if it's your available trucks, the loading, the optimization, all these classical problems you know from the NP problems when you go to university, you can now get much closer to predict the results. And this is what you have to do. But the most people come to me and they want to talk about AI. And the first thing I said, you know what? AI starts with data. We go back to the point. You know this term, in, sorry for my bad French, but in mathematics or in IT, shit in, shit out. This did not change, even not with AI. You know, it's the same. You need to go on the data, and you understand your data. You take this new set of formula, and you come to put better insights. And then based on these insights, you can take better decisions. Because this is, at the end of the day, what AI does. It gives you a much higher variety to take better decisions.
And that would mean, for example, when I look in the trucking world, when in future we go to electric trucks, then the charging behavior is something which is completely new. Today, pumping gasoline and always driving with 600, 800 liters, which is always too much for a day, but makes it absolutely foolproof. You don't need AI. In future, with batteries, where you're much closer to the limit, Reichweitenangst will be the new German word that gets internationally used. You need absolutely clear predictions, when to charge, when it's the best time, and when the energy is the cheapest. Do I charge multiple times a day a little bit, or do I charge at one point of time everything? This would be, I imagine, a typical AI specifications, because you know exactly where your trucks are running. I know Lidl is running a lot of trucks. That would be something you could program pretty easily.
Absolutely. the end, I love this Reichweitenangst. I think they even tried to translate it this range anxiety, but nobody got it.
So Reichweitenangst sounds much more fearful than
range it's much anxiety. More fearful and ends at the same point that you run out of fuel or electricity when you finish up. But this is a pure AI case because it's not only the truck. When you take the battery management system, it is which speed do you drive, which temperature has the battery. When you come to the charge spot, is the preconditioning on the battery. Then you decide what is the charging speed. When you look on the private cars, I saw the new facelift of the Taycan, which I think is now at 3 kilowatt hours. They are talking about 12 minutes, but the battery has to be in the range, in the limit, on the temperature. And you have to calculate all of this. But on the other side, go on the grid. Is the electricity there? Can you really pull what you plan to do? This is such a complexity in numbers, and that's exactly coming in. And then you take the decision, okay, you charge here. Even suddenly you will say charge from 60 to 80% you would never do as a human being, because they know here's the grid, here's the spot, here's the right temperature you can do with this charging speed. And then maybe there's a traffic jam on the other side. Go out here, leverage the time until the traffic jam will be resolved. This kind of stuff and this Reichweitenangst, a human being cannot manage it.
And I could see that it even might help the electricity companies, because you could predict them to them exactly when, at what point of time, where you need what kind of electric load, which today for them is potentially, I know they run powerful computers in the background too, but for them prediction and load balancing is a big issue as well.
And this is, goes back to the point you said, and then it goes back to cost, because what you can do as a truck company, and this is when I started to answer your question first, you can call the electricity company and say, I need this amount of electricity at this time, at this point. And then you can more or less define with them the right price, because now they know the first time where's the consumption. And again, you see in this little example, in today, Reichweitenangst, the truck driver is under stress. And then what they will do, one day they will run out of juice, the other time they charge too much, they are too late. But in this complexity of the world, AI will help to take the right decisions. And then you are relaxed as a driver, you have the lowest cost, it's the whole optimization. And this is such a little example which shows what this new set of formulas will help you to get the right decisions. And this is why it's fascinating. The same like 40, 50 years ago, where the first computers came, and they were calculating things which you could not do with your pencil on a piece of paper.
When I look at your job today, you are not just the CTO, Chief Technology Officer of the Schwarz Group, you are co-CEO of an own company. Yeah, Schwarz branched out and is now active selling services on the IT side. Could you see yourself that your company, Schwarz Digital, goes into the AI business as well? Or do you have enough on your plate with your existing offerings?
No, we did already, and we had to go there. So we started with Schwarz Digits to have our own cloud, because this was so important for the data protection and sovereignty as a company, because the hyperscalers could not give us, let's say, the level of quality and privacy to run our customer data in the way of the values and the promises we gave to the market. So we started with the cloud. Then, of course, when you're digital, you can understand cybersecurity. It's a key topic. This was the second pillar. And then we decided to go in the AI, because AI is the new set of formulas for IT. So you have to be in there. And then with our innovation park, artificial intelligence, we really want to build an industrial park where people can live, work all around AI, to have an ecosystem, a melting pot for 5,000 people, really going into the domain knowledge we have in Germany, we have in Europe, and mix this with the knowledge and the talent from AI here, from our universities, to really come to these new insights. This is why we also went in there with an investment in Aleph Alpha, which is, I would say, the leading large language model AI platform in Germany, Europe. And we took an investment to get this knowledge experience. But I would say the biggest task for us here is to get the talent here and derive out of the talent the next levels of AI applications and solutions. And therefore, we want to offer our digital infrastructure and services that this can happen here under our digital sovereign framework we have in Germany and Europe.
Out of curiosity, how does it work that you get those two complete different cultures together? On the one side, Lidl is a leading food retailer. out of the tech guys, potentially one of the most boring industries. Is this working together, or are these two companies accidentally having the same name and the same owner, or is it one team working for one goal?
To be honest, the culture on a discounter is very similar, like in the IT, because this appetite for details, this appetite for the optimization on the edge, this is how you run a retail business. A retail business is really, as you said, retail is detail. To work with these margins, you have to be perfect solutions. When you look on the IT guys who run the normal infrastructure for our retail stores, 14,000 stores, they run 16 hours. Everything is programmed in a way they can run autonomous. If something happens, it has to go. They make multiple billion people a year going through this. When the stores close, the whole warehouses are on high peak and do this. So this is, from the working attitude, a very similar thing. Why we get these people and why they like us is the kind of projects. I can tell you, when I left SAP to come here, this was for me the most interesting IT project in whole Europe, maybe even the world, because on the Schwarz Group in the retail business, you must imagine you have all kind of data of all customers. You have all the goods. We have our own food production. We have our own recycling and waste management. When you start from the production manufacturing, you have all the ingredients. You have the stores. You have online. You have offline. This is, for an IT guy, this is the biggest data playground in the world. And they're generating day over day over day. I tell you one thing. When we are looking for talents, we have people who usually predict the weather. They don't find a job. When we have shown them the data we have here, and they don't care if they predict if there are clouds or if they predict which kind of goods have to be reordered the next day. For them, the eyes were glimmering. They were smiling like, oh, how much data is there? So the key thing what we have is we have tons of data, which is the foundation. This is the fuel of the 21st century. On the other side, we have questions which have to be answered, which is really extremely creative, and they want to do. Then we develop all over time new business models. Think about a store. You have a normal store, then you go on self-checkout, self-scanning, full autonomous frictionless doors. You know, for an IT guy, this is the place to be. And we win, and we hire our people on two things. On the one hand side of the projects, because they love this kind of project. On the other side, especially here in Neckarsulm, with the Bildungscampus and the Tomb of Munich and the ETH Zurich and the professors, the education, you create an, I call it, an environment for talents. We have the coding school, the Heilbronn 42. So here are people, on the one hand side, you learn, you have the academics, you have the research. On the other side, you have the practical use case, and you have the fuel, which is the data.
Mm-hmm. I like when you use the term fuel, because recently someone told me data is the new oil. And I said, hey, oil is absolutely useless. It's a pretty sticky black thing which poisons the environment. You need refineries, you need chemical plants, you need then later tools that use those products. And I have the feeling you are a guy who takes the raw oil and makes something useful out of it. Yeah. So we don't love the oil. We love what we can do with oil afterwards. Yeah. From cosmetics to cars, you know, whatever.
You're right. So I think the slogan was data is the oil of the 21st century. And this is why with oil you have the fuel. But the key thing what you said is refinement. Because the refinery is the question you ask to say, get me more out of that. And this is what we do, to really refine this oil, which is the crude data or the crude oil. This is just the pure data. And to be honest, this is why AI is so funny, because this is a refinement process technology with its formulas to get new insights. And I can tell you, when I was studying at the Schwarz Group and they told me that they have all kind of data, they know what happened in the store based on the receipt for the last years, decades, because this is even in Germany a law, as you know, you have to keep the receipts stored for 6 years from a tax perspective. They are sitting on this huge amount of data. It's like sitting on the biggest oil reservoir you could imagine, to stay in this oil and 21st century example.
Thank you so much, Rolf. It's really fascinating to see how, A, you love your job. Secondly, out of the 10-year-old kid who started looking for cheat codes on games, now is really playing in the real world with really pushing things forward and changing things significantly. Really fascinating. I loved that we stayed more on the philosophical side, yeah, because often you get too nerdy and then nobody understands. But I think I could relate very well, and I can see possibilities for our company. And I could see that a lot of listeners might see possibilities for their daily work as well as for their company. So thank you so much for sharing that with us. Thank everyone for listening. Please join us again for our next episode of Transportation Matters, because transportation truly matters. And it has so many aspects, and that's a fascinating thing about it, including digitization. Rolf, thank you so much for being with us, and goodbye to everyone.
Martin, thank you so much. Really appreciate being here. Thanks. Have a great day.
That was Transportation Matters, the CEO podcast of Daimler Truck. If you enjoyed what you've heard, share this episode and subscribe to Transportation Matters on your preferred podcast platform. You can do this by tapping the follow or subscribe button right next to the podcast title.